Hickory dickory dock, the expat ran to the shop, a gin or two, a new pair of shoes. Hickory dickory dock.
There you go, Stairs. We've thrown in all the stereotypes.
Because yes, that's what we do. We all drink gin and shop. Although I do shop.
Do you do shop? But you know, I don't buy a lot of shoes. I'm not a shoe shopper.
I'm really hard on my feet, so I don't buy a lot of expensive shoes because I'm scared I'm going to ruin them. So they just sit in my wardrobe. So, yeah.
Hello,
everyone.
Hello. welcome to Two Fat Expats.
Yes.
The podcast that is about making expat life fatter.
Living a fat life.
A fat and full expat life.
Yeah, and because we're both a little bit fat.
Just a tad. After my weekend in Dubai, I think I'm a little bit fat.
Did you eat a lot?
Oh, it's the type of food, because we were at our second daughter had her softball kind of camp thing tournament. So it's a softball baseball tournament.
Yeah.
And at those functions, the food is just
full on.
Oh, well, it's naughty. Like, it's burgers, it's hot dogs, it's nachos with that.
Oh, the fake cheese.
And it's not, you know, fake cheese is kind of banned at our house.
Gwyneth Paltrow once said that she would rather die than eat fake cheese.
Oh, poor Gwyneth.
Yeah. I don't do the fake cheese.
We don't do fake cheese, but you are allowed to have it at baseball.
And, okay, fair enough.
So, and yeah, the kids just have it by the bucket because they can squeeze it on themselves and it comes, oh, it's just hideous. So, yeah, that was our weekend of sitting on the bleachers. I sat on the bleachers for so long and in the heat that I nearly wore a hole in my pants. Because they were, it was that whole rough.
Now you'll have to go to the shops.
A gin or two. Okay, says today we're going to talk about living in an expat bubble.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a few people in the expat world talking about this at the moment because there was a great article written by Lisa Abkowitz.
Yeah, I think it came up on my Facebook feed when we were talking about doing this as a topic.
It's kind of popped up everywhere. Yeah. And the Wall Street Journal, of course, has their fabulous expat blog. Mm-hmm. And she had written a post about living in Beijing and how where she lives, it could be very much classed as a little expat bubble. Mm-hmm. It's called Central Park, I think, isn't it?
Yeah.
And
the tower she lives in, it's got all Western stores and grocery stores. And,
And she was talking about the alternative of that is if you choose to live a very local life. You may end up sort of having to pee in a chamber pot because
your electricity can be turned on and off and no running water. Or you had to share something about sharing a bathroom with your neighbours.
But she was also saying about internet coverage not being strong. And so people tend to go for the comfort of living
that
somewhere where
me.
They get the shower and the internet coverage. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would be me too. The internet would kill me probably more than the shower and the bathroom.
If I couldn't check Facebook about 20 times a day, I would die.
But you and I were talking about how there is this perceived notion of expats and how they should live.
Yeah.
And, you know, people get very judgy about expats, about not living within the culture of a place.
Mm-hmm.
And how there's a huge difference between travellers and expats.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because when you travel, when you go on holidays, you might only be in that country or that city for a couple of days or, you know, max a couple of weeks. You really want to immerse yourself into that culture and eat their food, wear their clothes.
Yeah.
Do all of that. And we were laughing about when you see people in Bali and Thailand or Sri Lanka with the braids in their hair and wearing the dresses with the elephants on them. And
That
doesn't really kind of work when you step off the plane, does it?
No. And that's the difference with expat life is you can go and immerse yourself. And I mean, maybe even if it's a month or 6 months, you'll eat all the food and you'll live it and breathe it because you know that you're going home too.
Yeah.
And I haven't yet to meet a traveller that doesn't come home and say, oh, I just want a steak or I just want to have mum's roast.
Yeah.
You know, so I think when you're an expat though and you're living that life for a long period of time, you know, maybe 5 years or longer, all of a sudden you want to kind of get some of the creature comforts from home to make you comfortable.
But I still eat Vegemite on toast every morning.
Yeah.
Now, you know, I don't know if I would be having Vegemite every day if I was back home, but I feel like it's that connection to home.
Yeah. So I think, you know, I grew up in the country where we had a strong sort of Italian, Greek, Turkish mm-hmm. community. And I remember on Friday nights, because this is back in the day when you lived in the country, everyone went into town on Friday nights. Yeah. That doesn't happen anymore.
No.
But so everyone would go into town on Friday nights, and you'd always see the Greek and the Italian community would be clustered together. They had a special corner that was their corner, mm-hmm. and that's where they'd all hang out and meet and talk, and they'd yeah. be talking in their language, mm-hmm. and they'd be, you know, if you went to an Italian friend's home for dinner, you know, they were eating very much Italian meals yeah. In an Italian sequence, you know, mm-hmm. the salad came out at the end yeah, and it was yeah. all around, you know, a different way than what we would have uh-huh. thought. And yeah. You learnt a lot about Greek and Italian culture yeah. because of it. But I totally understand that now, why there had to be, because they wanted to give their children that little piece of where they were from.
Yeah, yeah.
And even though they had
anchoring
emigrated.
Their roots almost. Yeah,
yeah. And they'd still, they had immigrated into Australia, but they didn't want to give it up completely.
Yeah, yeah. I've got a girlfriend in Australia. She actually used to live here in Doha, and her parents are from the Philippines, and they never spoke to, they never taught her Tagalog. Oh. So when she moved to Australia, it was all English. So they would still have the Filipino culture, like the food and things like that.
Yeah.
But she can understand a little bit of Tagalog, but she can't really talk it, and it was
yeah.
speak it, because her parents, when they moved to Australia, it was like, right, you're in yeah. Australia, you're going to speak English, you're going to be an Aussie kid.
I was out to dinner recently with a woman, and she is Australian, but she was obviously of sort of Asian descent. I've got no idea where from, and it wasn't a conversation point. Until she said, someone asked her if she wanted chopsticks, and she said, no, I'm sorry, I'm a really bad Asian. I thought that was fantastic. But I think that's the thing, isn't it? How you look and how you've lived might yeah. be two very different things.
Yeah.
And people make an assumption,
yeah.
don't they?
Yeah. Yeah.
So we were saying that for us, living in a bubble, there's that difference of your children, because you're trying to raise children that understand the culture of where they are mm-hmm. And are appreciative of that culture
yeah.
and know the rules and mm-hmm. don't break the rules mm-hmm. and be understanding. But you also want them to be able to go home one
yeah.
day
yeah.
or what we consider home
mm-hmm.
because they're not going to, you know, my children will never get the opportunity to be Qatari. They'll mm-hmm. never be able
never
to have
get
it.
Get a passport.
They'll never get a yeah. passport because they're not allowed to.
Mm-hmm.
That's very common. And I think a lot of people don't realise I've had four children in four different countries.
Mm-hmm.
Canada was the only one that any of my guys could have become a part
right.
of. Henry
okay.
has. He has
so
a Canadian.
Oh, you
no,
didn't have it,
but even then, Annabelle was born in Kuala Lumpur in Malaysia, and
right.
we had to sign something to say we promise we'll never come back and try and gain citizenship
wow.
for her. Yeah, like it was
okay.
very clear.
Yeah.
And my third guy was born in Malta.
Mm-hmm.
We were living in Tripoli, but we sort of jumped over to Malta and had him, and the same thing, we had to sign something saying he will never be Maltese because,
wow.
you know, we're Australian and he's not from Malta.
Mm-hmm.
So I think a lot of people don't realise, you know, that expats don't often always have that opportunity for true, I guess, would you say assimilation? That's such a revolting
yeah,
connotation to it, doesn't it?
I don't know, because
yeah.
when I look at Sadie, and we've spoken about this before, the Middle East really is all she knows. Australia is a holiday destination for
yeah,
her.
Yeah.
But we do talk about Australia a lot, and we laugh when she tries to do an Aussie accent.
Yeah.
And we try, you know, we talk about Australian history and what have you, but really the Middle East is, you know,
yeah.
that's her little expat bubble.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So do you think I saw there was, there's been a few blog posts from different expat bloggers about the article in the Wall Street Journal.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a guy who has a blog called Bosmosis.
Yeah.
He'd written a post called The Defense of the Expat Bubble.
Mm-hmm.
And, what I had found interesting was he'd kind of reiterated exactly what was said in the Wall Street Journal, but one of the comments that was given was from a guy called John Connell, and he had said that he didn't call himself an extreme expat because
mm-hmm.
he was an American, I think, living in French Canada. He was in Quebec.
Which is not typically known as an expat community, really.
No.
I think by extreme expat he means those
yeah.
that are living in the Middle East or
yeah.
Asia or what have
yeah.
you. Yeah.
But he was saying, speaking French uses every bit of glucose in my brain. When it's over, it's kind of soothing to turn on the satellite radio in the car if I drove that day and to come back to my bubble building, meaning where he lives is a bit of a bubble. Most of the people here are students or or medical residents that speak English, usually from Anglophone Canada and Arabic-speaking countries or Asia. I know my French would get better if I'd get out there a bit more for a cultural exchange if I lived in a Francophone building, but it's a sanity restoring to not have my cultural translation engine on all the time.
And I get that.
I totally get that because, yeah. You know...
When you're thinking in your language, trying to speak another language,
yes.
Can only imagine how difficult that can be. That I would be the same. I'd want to get home and switch off and listen to my favourite radio station from back home. I get that.
But it's also just that small thing of if you're with a group of people and you use one of your idioms of your country and no one understands a word you say.
Yeah. And that can even happen when it's we're all speaking English. You know, I've got Scottish friends or South African friends that I will say something that's quite Aussie and it just comes naturally to me, and there's that blank look of what?
And also there's great expressions too that people say and you go, I think I know what that means.
But I'm not entirely sure.
And so it can be a bit exhausting if you've spent a week of nobody here gets me. I'm having fun and I'm really enjoying the cultural experience, but gee, it is exhausting having to constantly translate and explain and describe. I had a girlfriend who went for a job interview recently, and the same thing, they were asking her how she would explain something to someone that English was a second language, and she said trying to sort of simplify her language that much, she said, God, it must be exhausting by the end of the day to have to constantly think of, now how am I going to say that better?
See, Matt's quite a bit of a wordsmith. He loves language, he loves using big words, and more often than not, I'm just saying, use less words.
Yeah.
Not to me, but to
when you're ordering the soup.
Use less words.
But that's even worse, because that's when you end up speaking that really jotted, I say no. I say no to you. You stop.
There's been in Doha recently, there's been a shortage of food. Dog food.
Right.
And yesterday we were doing our grocery shop and dog food was back on the shelves and the guy in the supermarket was stacking. I went running over to him and said, oh my goodness, there's dog food back in Doha. And he just looked at me with this like blank look, and I was speaking too fast, too quickly. I was too excited and he was handing me the dog food. I'm like, no. Why was there no dog food in Doha? He's like, still, and then I just had to use less words. And I just said, no dog food in Doha. And he said, no, ma'am. You know, there was a shortage in Dubai, but we've got it back from. We had a whole conversation and we got there in the end.
It was the great dog food shortage in 2015.
Yeah, much like the chicken one a couple of years ago.
I remember the tinned tomato famine.
Yes.
But, yeah, I know exactly what you mean. When we were in Jakarta, I remember walking out the door. It was a... like a public holiday, and I said to the doorman, just a throwaway comment, so how come you drew the short straw? And he was like, sorry. And the more I said it, the ruder I became, because I kept saying, well, you have to work, but I'm not working.
It's that whole lost in translation thing, isn't it?
It's awful. And then you think, I sound hideous. I don't want to sound like this. Back to the whole living in your bubble. With expats, there is a certain amount of bubble living just for a bit of salvation.
Yeah, absolutely.
And trying to hold on to that culture. But there's also the flip side of that. There are the people that are living their bubble that are
you can live too much in your bubble, I think.
And so there was an article in The Telegraph, wasn't it, written by Elizabeth Roberts, and it was called Unsociable British Expats Fail to Make Local Friends, which is, you know, not a clickbait sort of headline at all, is it? Anyway, they were asking Brits for a ratio of how many expat friends to local friends that they had. And it was really kind of interesting, because more than one in four, so that's 27% of expats, said they would describe their social group as mainly British, while one in 10 admitted that their friends were exclusively British.
So they're right in their bubble there.
Yeah, and just 10% mixed predominantly with locals. But when you sort of scratch the surface a bit more, you could see that it depended where they went.
Yeah, what country you're living
so
in.
So if they went to Canada or New Zealand, they had barely any expat friends. Mm-hmm. Like it was only 5% of their friends.
Because, again, it's not an expat, it's not a typical expat country.
Well, do you know, when we moved to Canada, we lived in Calgary where there were oodles of expats, but we didn't have very many expat friends either. But I think it's because when you go to move into your, you know, your everyday life,
yeah,
it's really not that dissimilar.
Yeah.
Do you know?
Yeah. I think if you're moving from London to Sydney,
yeah,
pretty much same,
yeah,
same.
Yeah. You can't say that driving on the opposite side of the road or, you know, not being able to get, I don't know, what are you, that Hungry Jack's is not Hungry Jack's, it's Burger King or
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
there really are, you know, there's a lot to learn,
mm-hmm,
but it's a lot easier,
yeah,
to
absolutely
get in.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas when you come to a Middle East and you become friends, like I know for G and I, when you become friends with a Qatari couple, it's really interesting how you socialise because you don't socialise.
Socialising together.
No, yeah, not as much. I mean, we do have young Qatari friends that, mm-hmm, say, do you want to have dinner? Or,
yeah,
yes, we're happy to come to your house or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But not all Qatari couples want to do that. They,
yeah,
don't want, maybe don't want to entertain in that way.
Yeah.
They're not,
yeah,
ready to do that yet. So it just depends where you are,
yeah,
I think.
See, I wouldn't say that I have. I'm the class mum at Sadie's school for her year group, so there's Qatari kids in her class that I speak to their mums sort of on a weekly basis over text message and sometimes email,
yeah,
and phone, but I haven't really, and not because I haven't wanted to,
yeah,
it just hasn't, the opportunity hasn't risen really,
right,
risen for me to make friends.
Yeah.
Not that I would stop that happening, it just hasn't,
yeah,
happened.
Yeah, yeah.
So I wonder if that's the same for a lot of other expats where the opportunity just hasn't come up for them, or...
I think it'd be fairly safe to say if you asked a Qatari friend if they wanted to have a coffee, they would go.
Mm-hmm.
Because they just, I have found that people are uber friendly, and I've been invited to more Qatari houses than I've probably invited Qatari women here to,
right,
mine,
yeah,
do you know?
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
I think it's just a matter of making the suggestion.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think at the end of the day, it doesn't matter where you come from. If you're a woman, you're,
yeah,
a woman, and we all find something to,
yeah,
talk about, don't we? We're,
yeah,
we're mothers, we can,
yeah,
talk,
absolutely,
about raising children. If we work, we can talk about our work life. So I don't,
yeah,
think it matters really where you come from.
No.
We all have some type of common...
Yes, denominator.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. It's just that culturally, probably our backgrounds are going to be very different.
Yeah. Then that's how you learn, isn't it?
Yeah. That's right. So maybe the thing is, maybe you've just got to put yourself out there. I'm not saying you personally, but,
mm-hmm,
to listeners, if you say, oh, I don't have any Indonesian friends, or I don't have any Singaporean friends, or I don't have any, put, maybe try and give it a whirl.
Yeah.
Because I think you've got to be the one that does it. Even if you move back to Australia, you have to be the one that does it. You,
yeah,
know, you've,
yeah,
got to be the one suggesting, come,
mm-hmm,
over for a cup of coffee.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
So maybe it's just getting brave enough,
mm-hmm,
to say, do you want to do it? I think you and I were saying before, the interesting thing, a lot of people, when we're talking about the judgment of, you know, people living in their bubbles, and I know I wrote something a couple of years ago. I went to a shop in the city to pick up a dress, and I couldn't speak the language, and I must have written something about it in a blog post about, or thinking I'd written something humorous about the language breakdown,
mm-hmm,
of me needing to come back and get the dress and having to come back later and whatever. And someone wrote to me saying, I cannot believe that you haven't learnt Arabic. Why haven't you learnt Arabic? That's disgusting. You've lived there for 4 years and you haven't learnt Arabic. And I don't know if a lot of people realise that
Arabic's not really the language spoken, even though we're in an Arabic country.
Uh-huh.
It's sad to say, Arabic is not the language spoken.
Well, it's not if you're in the service industry, that's,
yeah,
for sure.
Yeah.
You would be better off to learn
Tagalog or Hindi.
Or Hindi, because...
Yeah.
I mean, most of the people that you are meeting in shops, and or the people that you want to give directions in taxis, or,
mm-hmm,
the people that you are meeting to get anything kind of done,
are not
Arabic speaking people.
Yeah.
So I just wonder, like, yes, maybe in the office,
mm-hmm,
it would be a little easier to speak Arabic.
See, Matt works with a lot of Arabic guys, and it's never really been an issue, never come up.
No.
A lot of them have tend to go away for education, so English is
Yeah.
You know, they all converse in English.
And that's the thing. I know it's the same in Dubai. I was reading something recently where they said there's 200 different nationalities in Dubai, but definitely the main language now is not Arabic to learn. And so I think that's the thing. When we lived in Libya, when we were going to different shops or we were trying to, you know, organise different services, we found we would have been better off speaking French because there were a lot of Tunisian people and Moroccan people that worked in the supermarket or that came to fix something electric or do whatever. And we just thought, oh, God, if only we could speak French. We'd be so much better off.
Uh-huh.
So sometimes you can't assume
that just because the country you're in doesn't mean necessarily that that's the language that you're going to have to
It's really speak interesting,
isn't it?
Yeah. Okay, so it says you were talking about podcasts and you were saying that this one would have been better for our episode last week about sex.
So last week we did our sex episode where I'm still red in the face from everything that I revealed.
Have you spoken to your mum about it yet?
No. I think it's just going to be swept under the carpet. I don't know, because actually my mum's quite open. She'll be fine with it. Yeah. Anyway, so this podcast is called Love and Radio, and it's actually number 3 on the US iTunes chart at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely one to not listen to at work or with children around, because it does, it's quite seedy and sexually explicit at times.
Oh, wow.
But it's actually really interesting, and it's into its third season. It used to be a public radio show, much like This American Life and what have you.
Yeah.
So if you want to start with it, start with an episode called The Wisdom of Jay Thunderbolt. And
who is Jay Thunderbolt?
So he's a strip club manager.
Wow.
And he's really seedy and it's very dark. And I must admit, I felt really uncomfortable listening to the episode.
Why? Tell me why.
It was just, I was in my bubble. So I was in my Sarah bubble where strip clubs and seedy strip club managers and drugs and things like that are not part of my daily existence.
Yeah.
So listening to that was quite confronting but really interesting. My favourite episode was actually called The Living Room, about a woman who could see into the living room of an apartment building across the road and was watching this couple have sex.
Oh, my gosh.
And then so you thought, oh, this is what it's all going to be. It's going to be very tantalising and, you know, very, you know, rear window type thing. Listen to this. I was in tears by the end of it to see what happened to this couple. So I'm not going to say any more.
Okay,
it's called The Living Room
on
Love and Radio. If that's not your bag listening to people have to talk about sex and what have you, you don't need to listen to the whole podcast series, but The Living Room.
Definitely.
Amazing.
Do you know, we had that, when Greg and I lived in Perth, we were sitting out on the balcony with a couple of friends one night having dinner and we were sort of all, we had a double story kind of townhouse and we were up on the balcony and our guest just stopped talking and was just staring across the way. And we all kind of stopped to look at him and he was like, that woman's naked. And there was a woman standing in front of the mirror in her bathroom. She was completely stark as, but oh my God, it was excruciating because she was doing the whole, I'm just going to have a quick look at how things are looking.
Oh, is that something so personal and intimate?
It is incredibly personal and intimate. And you could just see that she was going, you know, is that boob smaller than the other boob that woman? And and then all of a sudden it was almost like she just felt these four sets of eyes and ducked down and hit the floor. I can imagine she would have just crawled out of that bathroom
desperate for her bathrobe. When I was living at home with my mum and dad, we were living on a very steep street and my bedroom upstairs looked into an apartment block. And there was a couple living there that had sex all the time with their curtains.
Open.
Yeah. And I always wonder, was it for show?
Oh, you think that was part of the gig?
Yeah, I think it was part of, because
how old were you when you were seeing this?
In my early 20s.
Oh, okay.
I had it too good living at home. I didn't move out for a long time.
But I'm thinking, how would that affect a kid who was like 12 or 13?
Absolutely. And I just think where they were living, they knew that so many different houses and apartments and what have you, it was in a city, were looking straight on, I think for sure.
That was that, part of the allure of people can see us doing this. Yeah. And we're still kind of invisible.
And they were gorgeous. Like they had amazing bodies and she was gorgeous and he had the ripped six pack and it was.
Yeah. So kind of just like us.
Yeah, exactly like me.
So my podcast for the week is one called New Tech City. Mm-hmm. And if you read their little blurb about them, they say, we talk about hearts and minds, not bits and bytes, meaning B-Y-T-E-S. And it's a tech show that's about human stories. So the one that I listened to this morning was called Parenting Strategies for the Digital Age. Mm-hmm. And it was a podcast about how children interact online while they're all sort of sitting around together. And the reason I was really interested in it was because I had gone to pick up my 15 next month daughter who has just received her very first phone. She was, you know, the last 14-year-old on earth without a phone, according to her. But I went to go and pick her up. She was at a bowling party and her and her girlfriends had been 10 pin bowling.
Yeah.
And when I went to pick them up, there would have been, I don't know, 12, you know, 15-year-old girls. And every single one of them had a device in their hand of some
and
sort.
And they were on it.
And they were on it while they stood there and talked to each other.
Yeah.
So they'd have one eye sort of scrolling and, you know, answering and doing whatever.
Yeah.
But were giggling and laughing and talking.
So do you think they were all looking at the same thing?
No, I think they were all looking at their own things and sharing all their stuff together.
Yeah.
And it's this whole thing with Snapchat of it's hysterically funny to sort of take photos of each other and send them to each other straight away and, you know, to write little captions and things on it. But also if you can take a photo of someone while you're talking to them and then have no idea you've taken the photo while you're talking and then send it to them.
Right,
like it's a real gotcha kind of thing. And, you know, Lissy was telling me on the weekend about, you know, a family friend, he's going to be 15 in a few months as well, and she was saying how a bunch of girls, and weirdly girls that she knows she'll be going to school with next year when she goes away, a bunch of girls had for his birthday done a flippogram of all the Snapchat photos they'd saved of him, like the screenshots they'd saved of him doing really dicky faces and things of him looking terrible, and that was their kind of birthday thing for him. It's so different.
Just made me feel really old.
But I just thought this was really interesting because this guy I talked about in this particular podcast, he runs summer camps, and they had done a new exercise this year where no one was allowed to have their device for the first week. So they had a week of just play and summer camp and activities.
Mm-hmm.
And then they introduced the devices in the second week.
Yeah.
And then they discussed how the devices had affected their interactions.
Wow.
And this man gets really emotional when he talks about it. It's really quite something because kids suddenly are saying how they really feel when I was talking to my friend and they just picked up their phone and they started texting someone else or they answered their email or they did whatever.
See, that's even happened to me. I've been sitting at coffee with a girlfriend and I've been talking about something and all of a sudden the phone, because she's had a notification, she's glanced at it.
But do you find, because I find when someone does that, my immediate reaction is to pick up my phone. Like, I'm terrible. If I see someone pick up their phone, even with Greg, if we go out and he picks up his phone, I'll pick up mine.
Yeah, I mean, we're exactly the same. And I know Sadie has an iPad, and all the time it's really useful to have in the back of the car or if we're going to be out and about to keep her entertained.
Yeah.
But there's been times when she and I have gone out for lunch and she's on the iPad and I feel like an absolute loser just sitting there.
Oh,
so now I've started the rule that if you and I are going out for mummy-daughter time, there's no iPad.
Yeah.
And I do the same with me and my phone.
Yeah.
Do you restrict the time that your children spend?
I think we're very lucky. And I had a girlfriend come and stay with us recently who's a teacher in Australia, and she said to me, Kirsty, I can't believe how little time your kids spend watching TV or looking at their devices. Yeah. And I think it's because my kids are really busy after school.
Yeah.
And so, like, I don't pick them up now. Like, today I'm not picking anyone up until 4:30.
Right.
So and then by the time we get home.
Dinner, homework.
Homework. Like, homework, dinner, bed. The TV doesn't go on and no one really can. Yeah. But what I do find really intrusive, and it's happened with the bigger kids, is they both get laptops for school and they're watching movies or YouTube or whatever on their laptops.
The thing at the moment is YouTube. So it is obsessed with YouTube, whereas when she used to do a lot of play and a lot of imaginative playing, she's sort of tended to go to YouTube, where we've had to really say, right, you can have 20 minutes of YouTube and that's it.
And it's amazing how they all find the same people. Annabelle, my second, said to me recently, I want to go back to London. And I said, I was thinking she was going to say, I want to go back to that fantastic park that we went to in Kensington Gardens, or I want to go to the Harry Potter thing, or I want to go whatever. No, she wants to go to London to visit all her YouTube friends. I was like, really? But it just amazes me that they all do the same people. Like little 8-year-old Henry loves Tyler Oakley, as does 15-year-old Lizzie. So, you know, and they all think he's hysterical and, you know, he's got millions and millions of followers. Back to the do I restrict, I don't find I have to. What I do have to do, though, is at homework time monitor that nobody has sort of gone over to the other side. So you also had an Instagram person.
She's an Australian blogger called Nicole Warne, and her Instagram is actually completely different from her name. It's called at Gary Pepper Girl. And she just does beautiful photos of, she travels around the world and she blogs and she's gorgeous and looks like a supermodel and she just does fantastic food, fashion and travel photos. And I just scroll through her feed and think, I'd like to be you for a day.
Right. Yeah. Now, why is she Gary Pepper Girl?
I don't know. I'll find that out.
Now, tell me, how do you know her name's Nicole Warne then?
Because when you go onto her Instagram homepage, it actually has her name underneath.
Oh, like NicoleWarne.com or whatever. And how does she get to live this life where she does this? I'm always she's fascinated.
Paid. She's one of those bloggers that gets paid to travel everywhere and go to fashion shows and eat fabulous food. And like I said, I'd like to be her for a day.
So we're talking blogs as well, and I'm going to talk about an oldie but a goodie.
Yes.
And
a classic.
It is a classic, and that's Kate Murphy from Woog's World. Mm-hmm. And Woog's World's been around, it has to be more than 5 years, because I've been around for more than, I've been around for 5 years and she's been around longer than I have. But anyone who reads Woog's World, and she is incredibly popular
And really funny,
hysterical, and very down to earth is the old Kate.
We've got a bit of 6 degrees of separation, Kate and I.
Do you?
Yeah. Yes. Her husband did some work for my parents.
Oh, okay.
My mum used to play golf with her mum.
Oh, wow.
And then a guy I used to work with, Steve, at Channel 10 back in Sydney, they went to university together.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so it's a bit of a connection.
Yeah, and I know exactly who you mean now that you've said that. Mm. Kate's lovely, and I have met Kate at Pro Blogger, and she is exactly as she is online in person and really down to earth. But she writes in Woog's World, I think, just about every day.
I would say 5 days a week.
But something she wrote recently really struck a chord with me, and it was called "Keep Walking, You Fat Mole," which was
now an Australian. That's quite an Australian term, isn't it?
Fat mole, to be called a fat mole,
Or just a
seventies, isn't it?
Yeah.
And it's very almost Sydney. It makes me think of puberty blues.
Yeah.
But Kate had been out in her, and she's a woman. I think she must be 41 now, because her turning 40. But she'd been out in her exercise gear going for a walk, and a bunch of boys,
her huffy puffy exercise
and a bunch of boys had driven past and yelled out, you know, "Keep walking, you fat mole," which is just absolutely, I don't even have words for that.
Those boys have to have mothers, had to have had a mum at some stage, and I wonder how they would have felt had someone said that to their own mother.
But I think we've all had that sort of interaction with a young boy at some stage. Mm-hmm. You know, I remember walking through school and some boy yelling out to my friend, "I've seen better legs on a table." Do you know, and I wonder with young boys whether they are going for the gag factor so often, you know, I think I'm going to be really funny and I'm going to get a real laugh out of this.
Yeah.
But I was listening, because I was saying I was at the baseball on the weekend with the kids, and the team that my second daughter was in, their age sort of from 10 to 13, and the boys of the equivalent age came and sat in the bleachers to mm-hmm. watch, and they were all talking pickup lines. And it started funny.
At 15, do they have pickup lines? Yeah,
it started funny. Like some guy said, are you from Tennessee? Because you're a 10 that I see.
That was cute, right?
But then it started to get derogatory and yuck and terrible. But what I loved was there was a teacher in the bleachers who they hadn't noticed. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't a school thing. This was a community thing. So there were kids from all different schools. But she just said, excuse me, boys. And with that, the entire bleachers just went silent
because teachers, school teacher voice.
Teachers have a way, don't they? They just they say excuse me, and everyone sits up straight. Yeah. And she really just went to town about, you know, guys. I might not be your teacher now, but there's a very strong chance that I will be in the future. So I'm going to be very careful how I tell you this, but you are being sexist and derogatory. And if you don't think you can sit on these bleachers and cheer for these girls, you better get up right now and go far away from here. And it was just, you could just feel these little boys just shrinking into their seats.
Good.
Now, the really shitty kid smirked and walked off. Yeah. But the other lot just sat there very quietly.
So the ringleader had had enough.
Yeah. But I think we have to remember to jump in and do that. It just made me realise you can't, if you sit there and you hear a bunch of boys talking like that,
speak up.
You have to speak up and say, excuse me, boys, you know, these are your sisters, your mothers, your whatever. Where do you get off thinking that you can talk about women that way?
Absolutely. I think for Matt, he didn't have sisters growing up. So he grew up in a very male-dominated household.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't really until he had a daughter that he realised how damaging it can be. Yes. And he was at work not too long ago and some men were sitting there saying some not so nice things about women in the office.
Yeah.
And Matt just said, I'm sorry, I don't want to be a part of this. I've got a daughter.
Yeah.
And I thought, good on you. Yeah. Like when he came home and told me, I thought, good on you.
Yeah. Anyway, so I thought that was really interesting. But Kate has a hysterical blog and it's called Woog's World and you can find her at woogsworld.com.
We'll put the link in the show notes.
But she is well worth, and I promise once you go there you'll be going there every day because it is one of those very addictive. I just go and
absolutely
check it.
Yeah.
So finally, Sez, we just wanted to say a big thank you. We had the best review on iTunes, which I just loved. Karen the truckie from Tom Price, who drives a 250-ton hauled truck for 12 hours a day.
Wow.
I would love her. I want to see her.
I want to sit next to her. I want to spend the day and I want to be on the CB radio. Like the whole over and out rubber ducky.
Yeah. Do you do that when you're driving in one of those trucks?
I hope so.
Because when I think about those trucks, I think mining and you know, up and down.
Surely there's some type of CB there.
I don't know, but Karen, we love you.
Yes. Thank you very much for your lovely review.
Your review was great, as was Sonia Cahill, who was from Brisbane. She left.
Was that Carl?
Carl?
Do you? Okay.
You know the tennis player, Darren
Cahill? Yes, Darren Cahill.
That's how you'd spell that.
Nat had an ex-girlfriend, it's Carl.
Oh, really? Mm. Oh, well, see, in South Australia, we're not that posh with Cahills. John Cahill was a great Port Adelaide.
She just changed her name to Carl.
Oh, dear. Okay.
Hope she's not listening.
So we'll be back on Thursday when we do our On the Road.
On the Road.
We had our first On the Road last
with
week.
Ali Longmake from Ali Fit Club. So we hope you enjoyed that sort of different side of two fat expats.
And it was fun to get in the car.
Yes.
Take it on the road.
Yeah.
And so we'll be back on Thursday with something different again.
And hope you've recovered from the sex episode.
Yes. We're sorry if the sex episode was a little too much.
You know, we've had a few people say to me, or I've had a friend say to me that the thought of me and Matt having sex made her sick.
Oh, that's disgusting. Yeah. Like, that's not a good friend.
No.
Get rid of
it. So I'll just talk about her on a podcast all about my sex life. But yeah, isn't that horrible?
That is horrible.
Yeah.
And unnecessary. Yeah. All right. Okay.
So have a great week, everyone.
Yes, and we'll see you a bit later.
See you next week. Bye.
Okay, bye.
Hickory dickory dock, the expat ran to the shop, a gin or two, a new pair of shoes. Hickory dickory dock.